on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and today is Friday, April 11th, 2025. And a round of applause and congratulations to everybody. We finally made it through this week that has seemed as though it has been a year. What an eventful week. And through it all, we've been here trying to help educate you on what's going on, trying to help you prepare your portfolios like we do every day, because that is our goal, to help make you a better and more informed investor. And that goal has never been more important than weeks like this week, than days like today, than years like 2025. Investing in bull markets is easy. Investing in volatile markets is harder. And so now is not the time to lose focus. And so today, we will, as we always do, bring you educational items, some actionable items, a discussion on various retirement accounts. But more importantly, most importantly, we will be answering your finance and investment questions, the ones you've left via voicemail over there on our YouTube. That's Invest Talk with two T's, or hopefully sometime with a live call anytime throughout the show. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and round out the week, as well as run down those show topics I have for you. But first, let's tackle this caller question.
Hi, I wanted to get your opinion on Eli Lilly, ticker symbol LLY, and the healthcare sector in general in this environment. Thank you.
Bye. So Eli Lilly is a pharmaceutical company headquartered in Indianapolis, Indiana. I mention that because it's important these days. The company specializes in treatment for diabetes, oncology, immunology, neuroscience, and cardiometabolic diseases. Notably, they have a GLP-1 drug that they market that was approved by the FDA, Zepbound, in December of 2024. That's a fairly large company, about $684 billion with a B, dollar market cap. They have a little bit of debt, about $33 billion. But when you're that large of a company and you're generating that much revenue, you can carry $33 billion worth of debt. Now, over the past year, they're down about 3.58%. Year to date, they're down 5.13%, outperforming the S&P 500 and its industry. In fact, they've outperformed the S&P 500 and their industry going all the way back to 2020. From a revenue perspective, growth looks fantastic, 15% on an annualized basis going back to 2019. Net income's growing at 18% on an annualized basis. Margins are stellar. 15.4% was their low in 2023, projected to be 35.2% this year. And so what's been driving the performance of Eli Lilly and driving the performance of companies that have GLP-1s is the market for these drugs. These drugs that originally were diabetes drugs that have been used to combat obesity and weight loss have gotten widespread use both on and off label, now getting approval from the FDA at the end of last year to do more than they were originally intended for. But enter tariffs. Every company we look at, we have to consider the implication of tariffs. And you'll remember I mentioned, one of the first things I mentioned, this company is headquartered in Indianapolis, Indiana, and their manufacturing also happens to be in the United States. And so when the president goes out there and says, we want to tariff manufacturers, or rather, I'm sorry, pharmaceutical companies, pharmaceuticals that are coming into this country, well, companies like Eli Lilly may stand to benefit there. They have lower risks. Now, there is a potential that the coverage of these GLP-1s for obesity may go down from a government-funded plan perspective. The current health secretary has already said as much. That could hit their revenue stream. There's a potential that some of those off-label uses and consumer demand may fall as incomes and discretionary spending fall. But overall, relative to other pharmaceutical companies, I think Eli Lilly is a good choice because of where they are located, because of the lines of business and the drugs that they have, the patents that they have, and just given the overall macro environment. Now, before we make a final call, let's look at their relative valuation, 28.9 times. Lower than their five-year average. Still kind of expensive, but nowhere near their highs, so just about below their five-year average. Overall, from a technical perspective, I think it looks okay. On the 1 year, you're seeing a lot of volatility there, but past 6 months, down a little bit. Year-to-date, looks pretty good relative to the rest of the market. That is Eli Lilly. I think as far as pharmaceutical companies go, it's a pretty solid one. Thanks for the call. We got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned for you. My main focus point concerns this question. Should you convert your tax-deferred savings to a Roth? It's important to weigh the pros and cons of converting your tax-deferred retirement savings to a Roth IRA by considering factors like tax implications, financial goals, and long-term benefits. Also, we'll touch on the role of the dollar and its ever-changing, quickly, rapidly changing role in the global financial system, something that we've seen over this past week. What has it done? What will it do? We'll also touch on auto tariffs, a story we didn't get to yesterday because we had a little bit of technical difficulties, but it happens when you're doing a live show. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on the Justice Department and how it's scaling back crypto enforcement. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, including one on Micron Technologies, ticker MU, and DRD Gold Limited, ADR. Also, some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. We're going to do a short break, and on the other side, I will talk a little bit about today's market activity and answer more of your finance and investment questions here on InvestTalk.
Okay, gotta get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still gotta be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
April is Financial Literacy Month. For a limited time, you can receive the first 3 months of the KPP Premium Newsletter free. Sign up now at investtalk.com and use the code KPPFLM. And now the phone lines are open, waiting for your questions. InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. The end to an eventful, volatile week. U.S. stocks were higher today, though finishing a bit off of their best levels. The Dow up 1.56%, S&P 500 up 1.81%, NASDAQ up over 2 at 2.06%, Russell 2000 up 1.57%. Looking across the market, outperformers, looks like industrial metals, banks, semis, airlines doing well today. Relative underperformers included trucking, credit cards. Some of those smaller banks didn't fare too well today, apparel and cruise lines. Treasury, something we've been talking a lot about, weaker on the day yet again. The 10-year at 4.497% today. Dollar index also down of particular importance. We'll talk a little bit about that later on. Down 90 basis points on the day. Gold finished up 2.1% at a fresh record close, while crude oil settled up as well at 2.4%. And so, overall, not much change to the trade narrative on the day. The upside probably due to more positioning and technical dynamics. But the market had to have been reassured when the Fed comes out and says, listen, we will backstop the Treasury market. Now, that doesn't solve all your issues. But at least the Fed is out there saying, if there's a liquidity crisis, we have the tools at our disposal to help stabilize things. Market participants don't like crises. They do like reassurance. Now, there was some additional ramp up in tensions between the U.S. and China. Yet again, Beijing increased their tariff rate on U.S. goods to about 125%, about 20% below where the U.S. now has their tariff rate. And from different businesses, you're starting to hear something similar, which is we may be taking back the guidance we gave you earlier in the year because a lot of things have just changed. On a macroeconomic front, April preliminary Michigan consumer sentiment came out. It missed. It was down for the fourth straight month. Consumer confidence, the lowest it's been since June of 22 in the pits of inflation. Inflation expectations also jumped with the 1 year up 1.7%. 1.7% month over month to 6.7%, the highest level since 1981. In fact, the share of consumers now expecting higher unemployment in a year, the highest since 2009. Certainly not the sign that the administration wants to see, with more cracks forming not just in the economy writ large, but on expectations of the future. March PPI came in as well, dropped 40 basis points month over month against the consensus of a 20 basis point rise. Core PPI down 10 basis points month over month against the forecast of a 30 basis point rise. So all this good news of inflation happening, of course, before the tariffs were announced, before the tariffs were implemented. Again, different world March was. It'll be interesting to see what we get for the month of April. Now, other Fed speak that I think is important to know about. New York Fed's Williams cautioned the high level of uncertainty. Sees growth slowing to below 1% this year, tariffs potentially boosting inflation to 4%. Rough week, but we definitely all made it through together. So excited to, or hesitant to, or however you feel, looking forward to being back with you all next week to talk more about the market. Now let's grab a YouTube question. This one came in earlier from 4K Street Clips 2022. I may check out their YouTube to see if they have cool street clips. And this question is about Chevron. It says, can you do a stock analysis on Chevron on your radio show? Now, Chevron has not been faring as poorly as a lot of names in the oil industry year to date, right? They're only down about 6.36% year to date, outperforming the industry by 2.6%. But that comes after 4 years of underperformance. And also a relative strength that has never quite been above the S&P 500 over the past 6 years. Their revenue grown kind of all over the place. But again, we know with these oil companies that their revenue, their profits, it's all tied to the underlying commodity. Now, one thing that I would note is with Chevron, it is a massive, massive company, $236 billion market cap, $29 billion in debt. So a lot of wiggle room there. Cash flow, though, not doing exactly what we'd like it to do. It's been on a downtrend since really the middle of 2022. And so what is going to affect Chevron going forward, not looking at its historical performance, is essentially going to be what we've been talking about for, I don't know, about a week now. And the effect that tariffs are going to have on global demand and therefore what oil prices are telling you. Now, oil prices up, like I said, today, but still down pretty significantly, hopefully going to be back up above the $65 level at some point where it becomes profitable for these companies. But Chevron is in a interesting situation, right? They had an acquisition of Hess, which may be suffering some regulatory scrutiny going forward. They have some legal challenges coming out of other countries. And so I'm of the opinion generally with these oil companies, with these energy companies, I don't typically like getting zero exposure to all sectors because you never know when things are going to shift. They tend to shift quickly. So for Chevron, it is a company that we have held on and off for our clients. I just think if you are going after one of those larger oil companies, there are ones that are more diverse, not just in their exposure to renewables, oil, and natural gases, but more diverse in terms of where their operations are. And so if you want to be on the larger side, I think there are better oil names out there. Either way, Chevron is definitely in for a ride as we see what happens with global demand and the effects it has on oil pricing. Our moving into break, still to come, my main focus point, a little preview of our newsletters we always do on Fridays, a rundown of those key benchmark numbers where we'll talk about oil, not just today, where it's been, the price of gas. The one in California always hurts me because it's always so much higher. And of course, more answers to your finance and investment questions. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART is the number if you want to give me a call. We're getting a little lonely over here. But until that time, let's dive into my main focus point today, which is really about something that can be beneficial to a lot of investors, but only if they do it correctly. And that's the answer to the question, should you convert your tax-deferred savings, so your traditional IRA, into your Roth IRA? And first and foremost, the question is, well, why would you do that? Well, your traditional IRA is pre-tax dollars. You are not yet taxed on those dollars, but you are responsible when you withdraw those for paying taxes. It is tax deferred growth. Now, a Roth IRA is different. You are putting after-tax dollars in there. You already paid taxes on those dollars, and you will not pay taxes on the growth. Those withdrawals are tax-free. There's also an additional benefit. While traditional IRAs have required minimum distributions after a certain age, age 73, you don't have those in a Roth account. For some people, you don't have the option of directly investing into a Roth. There are income limits for who can use these types of accounts. But one thing you can do is convert money that is in your traditional IRA to your Roth IRA. It's not too complex, though there are some things you should consider. When you do make that conversion, you will be responsible for paying taxes immediately in that year for the amount of money you are converting. And so because of that, there are a couple things you need to know, right? You should probably have some cash on hand to deal with it so that you don't have to draw down from those retirement funds, so you're not hit with penalties, so your nest egg doesn't shrink. But also where you are in terms of your tax bracket is important, right? Because if you're in a kind of high tax bracket and you have the potential of moving to the highest tax bracket if you do the conversion now because you have to recognize it as income in this year, well, then you probably shouldn't do it now. If you are going to down the road be in a lower tax bracket, you should probably wait to do it till then. For most people, this makes the most sense when you're early in your career, when you're making less money, or in any years you have low incomes for various reasons. Maybe you left your job, maybe you took a sabbatical, for whatever reason. You should be doing this in times you have relatively lower income. Now, another thing that helps is, or another thing that this does help is it offers tax diversity, right? It offers you the ability to have different accounts that have different tax treatments. So that in some years, maybe you want to draw down from your traditional IRA when you haven't made any money at all, when you may not pay taxes up to a certain amount. In other years, you may want to draw down on your Roth account. When you are making a lot of money, you don't have to pay any taxes on what you have. There's also the benefit of having a brokerage account as well, that you aren't locked in until you reach retirement. And this is because retirement tax rates are uncertain. Tax rates in general are uncertain. They're always open for change, or rather they always have the ability to be changed by new laws. And so being prepared for any scenario, just like diversifying the stocks, the bonds, the assets in the account, having diverse tax treatments helps as well. Now, starting in 2025, savers in their early 60s can also contribute significantly more to Roth 401ks and IRAs and other workplace plans. I'm sorry, just 401ks and other workplace plans, helping to also maximize that tax-free growth. But the core of the question is, should you convert? To me, the answer is yes, but the second question is when. So just a quick recap, those low-income years, if you know that you're going to be paying more later on, or maybe you're still working and you don't want to have to pay those required minimum distributions, always a good idea to have different accounts for any situation. Now, it is Friday, and because it is Friday, I want to run down what we always run down on Friday, and that is a quick preview of the KPP Premium newsletter. In the KPP Insights section, we discussed an update on the current market environment. And boy, does the current market environment need updating. For those of you that have been with us all week, been with us since last Thursday, we have been talking about the changes that have been going on and how they will impact everything moving forward. And that is not to say that we know what the future is going to look like, but we try to lay out what are the possibilities and how that might change how you want to invest your portfolios. Now, in the stock ideas section, we know that it is a scary time to try and invest in stocks when the markets are this volatile. You don't know if you're going to have a 10% up day. You don't know if you're going to have a 6% down day. You don't know if it's going to be flat. You don't know what's happening. That's the fear that comes with volatility. But regardless, it doesn't mean you can't identify good companies. And so in the stock ideas section, we mentioned a retail company as well as a large holding company. And lastly, in the portfolio management section, we're touching on a topic that I don't think it's covered enough. And I think traditional economists tend to look down on it a little bit. And that is behavioral finance. Not everything works as models predict. And that's because human behavior and frictions are introduced in real markets. And so understanding the role that behavioral finance plays in human psychology, in trading, in allocation, can help you to get an edge when you are making your own investment decisions. As always, if you're interested in the KPP Premium newsletter, we do have a special going on for Financial Literacy Month. So check it out on our website, that is investtalk.com. If you are a subscriber, the newsletter will hit your inbox on Saturday afternoons. Headed into another break, and after this break, we will get to more of your questions, so give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
The weekend is here, or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke. Kayla here from Seattle, Washington. And we're coming up here at the end of the second week of April right now. And I was just curious what you guys are doing with your oil positions that you have. If, you know, we're potentially coming up on some slower economic growth, are you guys holding? Are you guys planning to, like, find a good place to sell some off? If you could let us all know what you guys are doing with your oil positions, that would be great. Thank you for all that you do.
That is a great, great question. And so what you see on the screen, if you're watching at home, is the VanEck Oil Services ETF. It pretty much is just going to track the price of oil, which is why you see this stiff drop off over here towards the end of this chart, and then some sort of consolidation over here. Now, the question becomes a risk mitigation framework when you construct portfolios. And so I'm of the opinion that generally speaking, no matter the market environment, you want some sort of exposure to various industries, various sectors, especially ones that are so important for economic growth like oil is. Now, we did trim oil positions at the highs before all this happened, but that's just because we had an overweight position to energy. And as you get above target weights, well, then you start to trim stuff down. And so now we're in a situation where what we were holding is obviously worth less because of where the price of oil is moving. And so if you're a long-term investor, you can see how quickly things can shift and things can change, right? Go back to July over here, the far left end of the screen. Look how quickly this move happened, right? And so you run the risk of being left behind should the realities not meet the expectations of where global demand has moved. And so what I like to say is, in situations like this, in times like these, you should still maintain some exposure to what you have in your portfolio, what your thematic exposure, what the macro is telling you, what everything's telling you. I just kind of contract the rules and how stringent we are in how loose beyond, or rather how strict the criteria is for the companies that we're holding. And so for our oil exposure, we're definitely going to hold on to those names that are reliable names that have had good growth, good long-term growth potential, good cash flow, strong balance sheets. None of that changes. So for now, we're holding on to these names at the weights where they are. Certainly, again, things tend to move pretty quickly. And if you're a long-term investor, lows like this are good times to pick up exposure. Thanks for the call. Now, again, it is Friday, and we generally make time to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. So let me hit you with that list right now. Two-year treasury yield is at 3.933% today. For perspective, 1 week back, it was 3.681%. 37 weeks ago, that number was 3.882. 75 weeks back, it was 5.05. 173 weeks ago, it was 0.64. Woo! Cheap debt. 10-year treasury yield was at 4.478%. 8% today. 1 week ago is at 4, a dramatic move. 3.921 was the number 33 weeks back, and 75 weeks ago it was 4.63. Gold was priced at $3,232.83 per ounce. That is a $203 increase over last week. 74 weeks back, it was 1935, and 163 weeks ago it was 1806. Silver today was priced at $32.15 per ounce. That is an increase of $2.54 over last week, whereas 61 weeks ago it was $22.80, and 155 weeks back it was $23.94. Oil, selling for $61.70 per barrel, a decrease of 83 cents compared to last week. 29 weeks back it was $67.79, 71 weeks ago it was $74.30, and 171 weeks ago it was $66.62. The national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.21 per gallon, a 5-cent decrease over last week. 97 weeks ago, that number was $3.56. 145 weeks ago, it was $4.25. 165 weeks ago, that number was $3.57. This is the part I hate. In California, it was averaging $4.91 per gallon, a 3-cent decrease compared with last week. 75 weeks ago, that number was 532, and 151 weeks back, that was 587. For comparison, in Oklahoma, gas was averaging $2.76 per gallon today. That is $2.15 less per gallon than gas in California. Alrighty, let's talk about the dollar. And there is a growing threat, not just an idea that is passing through the minds of people such as myself, but also through companies like Deutsche Bank, who have said that the market seems to be systematically reconsidering if the dollar is a safe haven asset. And all of this has been driven by a shaken trust in the US dollar over the past week. Now, there has been a lot of focus from my side over the past week, because I've been with you every day through all this, on what is happening with treasury yields. And so I want to take a step back, because I think this is an incredibly important discussion to have. And so the way the dollar works is essentially this, and it's a pretty good deal. The world put yourself in this position. Somebody told you you would get to essentially have anything you wanted for pretty cheap. Somebody else would make it for you. And they would give it to you if you gave them little pieces of paper that you printed. Sounds like a pretty good deal. Now, obviously, trade is not that simple. But not only are they taking those pieces of paper, but then they would take those pieces of paper and push your ability to borrow into cheaper territory by investing in your debt. That's essentially how the dollar has worked. That is why, given our level of debt and deficits, we can finance what we have for as cheap as we do. Now, I mentioned the Fed said they're willing to come in should the treasury yield situation get out of whack, backstop the market, deal with liquidity, and that's fine. They can help support the treasury market. What they can't do is support the dollar. Historically, when markets tend to fall, when there is chaos, what you see is treasury yields rise and the dollar strengthens. Why? Because in order to buy treasuries, in order to buy those U.S. assets, which tend to be the safest, you have to buy dollars. That is not happening now. And the reason why it is not happening now is most likely this issue that not just I am pointing out, but some people in Bloomberg are pointing out, and Deutsche Bank are pointing out, and all these people are pointing out, which is that the demand for U.S.-based assets is going down. And the issue that brings is in the benefits that we may no longer have, that lower cost of debt. Markets that have outperformed other countries historically by a lot over long periods of time. A lot of that has been, from what Warren Buffett has said, the tailwind of the strength of the US dollar. And so should this be a trend that continues? Should the global reputation of US assets as safe havens start to continue to erode? With the dollar now, DXY down below 100, euro surging against the dollar, this liquidity shield, this safe liquidity shield, is removed. Higher borrowing costs are then likely to come at a time when we have to refinance a lot of US debt. So the question remains, is this a temporary shift? Is it a structural shift? It is too soon to determine what is the case there. But I think this all goes to understanding how complex the entire system is and some of the benefits that people don't understand or haven't appreciated that the US economy has had for decades may not be in place going forward. Now, from time to time, we also receive InvestTalk questions via email. We haven't answered an email one in so long. I didn't even know we had these anymore, guys. This one says, we've been investing for 25 years, and this is the first time we've done a panic sell. It says, hello. My husband and I panicked this week and put in orders to sell when the market opened on Monday over 1 million in stocks. We're just so unsure of what's happening. We're feeling like we should have done that in early January just to ride off the volatility with some more peace of mind. However, now due to the fact that the market's back up, we should not have acted on that panic. We've lost $130,000. What do you suggest we do to recoup the loss? And just so you know, we've been investing for 25 years and this is the first time we've done a panic sell. We only sold from our Roth IRA and 401k, and we hope to start taking money out of those accounts in 10 years. We're both 50. Thank you so much. This is the most difficult part about investing, is that the stakes are real. And when you are in your 50s, or you are 50, not only are the stakes real, but the stakes are close. And so it is understandable when tensions start to heighten that you get scared. But that's part of the discipline of understanding and taking the long view. Now, I would say maybe part one of this stands from, and I don't know how large your total account is, that when you're in your 50s, you should be starting to move more towards capital preservation because you need it sooner, and less towards an all-equity allocation. And so if you were pretty much all in stocks, if your entire portfolio is in stocks, well, then the first step is to understand the glide path of retirement investing and shift that allocation, which should in turn, in times like these, take a little worry off of your mind. Now, that is how to prevent the problem. That is one of the reasons why a lot of people use financial advisors, right? Is because the idea is to have somebody who has a fiduciary duty to you who can help in times of stress and times of worry, keep your eye on the goal and the reasons why you are doing what you're doing. Now, going forward, I think that you learned an unfortunate lesson that I'm so sorry that you had to learn, which was understanding that if you take the long-term view in markets, volatility tends to be just a blip. Now, you have 10 years left, probably 15 years left. Or no, sorry, you're taking out money in about 10 years. That is a very, very long time to start to try and recoup some of that lost capital. And so it's like somebody the other day who mentioned that they were in all cash. In times of volatility, dollar cost averaging back into the market can be your best friend. Because it's hard and it's scary because, again, the stakes are really real. But understand, first and foremost, over the long term, markets tend to be positive. Anytime you're thinking of doing something emotionally, take a deep breath, zoom out, realize what you've always done and why you're doing it. Thanks for the email. Let's keep it moving and pivot back to the InvestTalk voice bank for a question that came in earlier.
Hi, Justin or Luke. I'm calling today. I'm looking to add to my gold exposure. Two companies I was looking at specifically, ticker DRD and ticker IAG. One has a higher PE of around 16 and the other one around 5. And I was just wondering if you guys prefer a company that is based in South Africa or IAG, which is based in Canada. What do you guys look at when you look into investing into gold companies? And if you think any of these is good to invest in right now. Thank you for your time. Bye.
So let's take a look at these names. DRD is DRD Gold Limited. In order to access it, it is a sponsored ADR. It is going to be the easiest way to access it. Obviously, gold has been doing particularly well. Gold tends to do well in times of stress. I read a quote today, which I absolutely love, okay? And this is something that I think all of you have to keep in mind when you're thinking about upping your gold exposure, is when you're worried about the future, you buy gold. When you're worried about the present, you sell gold. And the reason why I want you to keep that in mind is because if economic stresses start to happen, that's not going to drive the price of gold up, because the reality is you have to pay your bills in dollars, right? You have to pay your phone bill in dollars. You have all these things in dollars. And so when you're worried about the future, you buy gold. When you're worried about the present, you sell gold. Keep that in mind. And so gold miners have understandably done very, very well. Now, DRD Gold is headquartered in South Africa. In terms of their geographic exposure, 100% of their exposure comes from South Africa. Looking at IAM Gold Corporation, whose ticker is IMG, not IAG. It is headquartered in Canada and has a little diversified exposure from Burkina Faso, also 37% from Canada. It's a $5 billion market cap company, whereas DRD Gold is about a $1.3 billion market cap company. DRD Gold trades at about 11 times forward-looking earnings. IAM Gold trades at about 8.4 times forward-looking earnings, so a little bit cheaper. And the growth is a little bit better with DRD Gold. The margins are a little bit better with IAMG Gold. You know, I think that for me, it comes down to geographic exposure. And IAM Gold, being a larger company, has a little bit more of split operations in terms of geographic exposure. It's also headquartered in Canada, which has more dependable, I would say, lower geopolitical risk than being in South Africa. And so either way, you're going to get a very similar investment experience, I would say, in terms of return, because it is so heavily based upon the underlying commodity. Not going to be the same in magnitude, but definitely the same in direction, right? Gold goes up, they both go up. Gold goes down, they both go down. For me, I would choose the one in a more developed country, lower geopolitical risk, more diversity. That is IAM Gold. Moving to a new break, I want you to know about our upcoming wealth webinar on April 30th. Registration is free, and all the information is at investtalk.com. Headed to a new break, give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Jackie from Wisconsin, and I just wanted to get your opinion on Verizon versus AT&T. I bought Verizon around $53.25, and AT&T around $18.25. So I just want your opinion on if I should sell both of those or which one would be a better long-term hold. I'll listen on the podcast. Thanks. Bye.
Let's take a look at Verizon and AT&T. Verizon is a $182 billion market cap company. They have quite a bit of debt, $141 billion in debt. Sales growth hasn't been too stellar. Net income growth has actually been negative, but margins have been expanding since 2023, up to about 13% net margin in 2024, and projected to be 14.4% this year. Trade about 9.1 times forward-looking earnings, 1.8 times book value, and their dividend yield is currently around 6.2%, which sounds high, but that's pretty much where it's been over the past 4 years as the price has fallen pretty consistently, at least relative to the rest of their industry. Now let's take a look at AT&T, which is ticker T. And AT&T, on the contrary, is up 63% over the past year. While their revenue is down 7.6% on an annualized basis, net income down 4.7% on an annualized basis, their margins a little bit smaller as well. But for both of these companies, which tend to be pretty high debt, right? They have not $190 billion market cap, $135 billion in debt. Comes down to what you are looking for. They're both relatively cheap, I would say, though Verizon is a lot cheaper. But they're both struggling. And it could be difficult in a higher interest rate, a higher inflationary environment for companies that have this level of debt to be successful. If I had to pick between the two of them, I think maybe the strategic acquisition of Frontier Communications that Verizon did stands to benefit it in terms of growth. It also has better revenue growth, better net income growth over the time period, albeit worse performance over the past 5-6 years. But overall, with these types of companies, you're asking a lot of them because they are communications companies. They carry high debt burdens. In the coming years, when they roll that, it could become more and more expensive. So for me, I would actually pass on both. That is Verizon Technologies, VZ, and AT&T Communications, ticker T. All right. Last talking point of the week. Surprise, surprise, it's about tariffs. And it's about the tariffs on auto imports. Because Trump's 25% tariff on imported cars and upcoming tariffs on auto parts affects a lot. It affects the cost of buying a new car. It affects the cost of buying a used car. It affects the cost of ownership of a car. If you need repairs, they become more expensive. It may affect the cost of insurance premiums, as an insurance company has to spread out the additional cost of fixing cars should they be in collisions. And so this should inform your decisions in multiple ways. Because insurers are going to likely, over the next 12 to 18 months, should these tariffs stay in place, pass the cost on to you. And so that should inform your financial planning decisions in terms of how much you're spending, understanding that in a lot of aspects, costs will rise. Understand also from an investment perspective, what does it mean for auto part retailers who are importing? Well, yes, they can pass on to consumers, and they will. But there tends to be something called the price elasticity of demand, meaning as prices go up, demand tends to fall. And so you can only pass it on to a certain extent. And so for auto parts suppliers who are importing, well, margins might fall. They may become less attractive investments. We mentioned insurance companies. If insurance companies have to pay more to repair people's cars, yes, they can pass it along in terms of premiums, and they certainly will, but only to a certain extent. They may have to eat those costs too. And so insurance companies could see their margins fall. And this is just some of the repricing we've already been seeing across the market. And so I think this is another in a long line of stories that is to help you understand that each of these changes will affect your wallet, yes, but will also affect your portfolio. And so over the weekend, as you're maybe reviewing what your allocations look like, maybe reviewing the types of companies you're invested in, understand what may happen in the next several months, how those costs may affect you financially, and how they will certainly affect you from an investment perspective. I'm Luke Guerrero. This completes another Invest Talk program. Thanks for sticking with me all week. I thank you for listening, and I encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, and please be sure to leave us a rate and review on iTunes. Remember, we can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics and calculate your risk number. We can also help you optimize your 401k and build you a full financial plan, but it all starts with a portfolio review. If you're interested, it's a free and confidential service. Just head over to investtalk.com and click the portfolio review button. We also have good news that Justin and I will be hosting a free wealth webinar on custom indexing. If you're interested in learning more about the investment strategy, also head over to investtalk.com and register. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.